Today is March the 30th, Sunday morning, a.m. It'll be the last class this morning on Nehemiah. And we were starting on chapter 10, where we had left off on chapter 10. And we had looked at chapter 10, verses 1 through 27, was the list of the people who had sealed their names to this new covenant that they had obligated themselves to in keeping the laws of God, which they heard in the daily readings that were taking place. And in verses 28 and 29 of chapter 10, we find that the people, having knowledge and understanding of the law, separated themselves from the people of the land, and they bound themselves together. They entered into an oath and a curse to walk in the law of God that was given to Moses, promising to observe and do all the commandments of God, His judgments and His statutes. They recognize God as their sovereign, the true one, one who has the right to rule, their master, their owner. This was the true meaning of Lord, and they recognized Him as their sovereign. In verse 30 of chapter 10, we find Nehemiah in starting of his outline to them. The first prohibition was concerning the intermarriage with foreign women. And Ezra had to contend with this on the intermarriages as found in Ezra chapter 9 and verses 1 through 3. He contended with it there. Now these things have been completed. The princes approached me, saying, the people of Israel and the priests and the Levites have not separated themselves from the peoples of the land according to their abomination. Those are the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. For they have taken some of their daughters as wives for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy race has intermingled with the peoples of the land. Indeed, the hands of the princes and the rulers have been foremost in this unfaithfulness. And when I heard about this matter, I tore my garment, my robe, and pulled some of my hair from my head and my beard and sat down appalled. So we find that Nehemiah contended with this, and also we find that Nehemiah, the actions that he took concerning these offenses. And he goes in a little bit more detail in chapter 13 when you look at verses 23 through 28, Nehemiah 13, 23 through 28. In those days, Nehemiah talks about back here in verse 10, chapter 10 and verse 30. In those days I also saw that the Jews had married women from Ashdod, Ammon, and Moab. As for their children, half spoken the language of Ashdod, and none of them was able to speak the language of Judah, but the language of his own people. So I contended with them, and cursed them, and struck some of them, and pulled out their hair, and made them swear by God, you shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor take of their daughters for your sons or for yourselves. Did not Solomon, king of Israel, sin regarding these things? Yet among the many nations there was no king like him. And he was loved by his God, and God made him king over all Israel. Nevertheless, the foreign women caused him to sin. Do we then hear about you that you have committed all this great evil by acting unfaithfully against our God by marrying foreign women? Even one of the sons of Joadad, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was a son-in-law of Sanballat the Horonite. So I drove him away from me. So Nehemiah took these actions in verse 30 of chapter 10. The oath that they signed to with the curse and so forth was that they will not give their sons or daughters to the people of the land or take their daughters for their sons. The second thing that it comes with, prohibition, was to restore the Sabbath in verse 31 and to stop the commerce that was taking place on the Sabbath day. They also needed to observe the seventh year rest of the land and the release of debt on the seventh year. When you look at Exodus chapter 20, verses 8 through 10, we find Moses giving the law concerning the Sabbath day that nothing was to take place on it. And you can also look at Leviticus, the 23rd chapter, and verse 3 for cross-reference on that. Nehemiah describes what he saw taking place again in chapter 13 of Nehemiah in verses 15 through 22. And in those days I saw in Judah some who were treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sacks of grain and loading them on donkeys, as well as wine, grapes, figs, and all kinds of loads. And they brought them into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. So I admonished them on the day they sold food. Also men of Tyre were living there who imported fish and all kinds of merchandise and sold them to the sons of Judah on the Sabbath, even in Jerusalem. Then I reprimanded the nobles of Judah and said to them, "What is this evil thing you are doing by profaning the Sabbath day? Did not your fathers do the same so that our God brought on us and on this city all this trouble? Yet you are adding to the wrath of Israel by profaning the Sabbath." And it came about that just as it grew dark at the gates of Jerusalem before the Sabbath, I commanded that the doors should be shut and that they should not open until after the Sabbath. Then I stationed some of my servants at the gates that no load should enter on the Sabbath day. Once or twice the traders and merchants of every kind of merchandise spent the night outside Jerusalem. Then I warned them and said to them, "Why do you spend the night in front of the wall? If you do so again, I will use force against you." From that time on, they did not come on the Sabbath. And I commanded the Levites that they should purify themselves and come as gatekeepers to sanctify the Sabbath day. Again, he brought that about, that Nehemiah had the gates closed on the evening or the night before the Sabbath day, beginning to be dark before the Sabbath. And this would correspond with being closed at the end of the day, which we would recognize as Friday, sunset, evening before the Sabbath started at sunset. Also in this, he had reinstituted again the seventh year of rest of the land that you find given in Exodus 23, verses 10 and 11, and in Leviticus 25, 2 through 7. The land was supposed to have rest. They weren't supposed to do anything to it. It was supposed to be left fallow by itself, and that was to be done every seventh year. We also find the release of debt on the seventh year in Deuteronomy 15, verses 1 and 2. And as we already looked at with the giving of usury or interest, that they were having a problem with this, with the debt and so forth. But we find in Deuteronomy 15, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a remission of debts. And this is the manner of remission. Every creditor shall release what he has loaned to his neighbor. He shall not exact it of his neighbor and his brother, because the Lord's remission has been proclaimed. And this was something that they got away from, that every seventh year you had that. So that was the second prohibition that he brought about. We find in verses 32 and 33 that he also had the ordinance of a yearly tax was made for the people to give one-third of the part of a shekel for the service of the house of God. We do read of the atonement money that was collected for the service of the tabernacle in Exodus 30, verses 11 through 16. But it was a larger amount. But this here was separate from the atonement money. This was for the service of the house of God. They're back in Jerusalem. Things are being restored. And, of course, the Levites, their inheritance was what was given to them from the others. That's what they had received. And so he is bringing back that for the service of the house so that they can minister in the house. We also find that not only that, but there was also supplying of the fruits, grains, and so forth, which we'll see here just in a minute, that he's restoring all this back, that the Levites don't have to do this, that they can tend to the service, to the worship that needs to be tended to in Jerusalem, and that therefore they are left not having to be burdened down with other affairs of life, but they can concentrate solely on doing the things that the Lord required for the worship. So, the third part of the shekel for the service of the house of God is reinstituted there. We find in verse 34, again, the making of arrangements for the supplying of wood for the burning of sacrifices. When you look back at Leviticus, the sixth chapter, in considering all the sacrifices that had to take place, and not only that, but all of the offerings and so forth, the variousness of it and the multiplicity of it day in and day out. In chapter 6 and verse 12 and 13, we find, "And the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. It shall not go out, But the priest shall burn wood on it every morning, and he shall lay out the burnt offering on it, and offer up in smoke the fat portions of the peace offerings on it. Fire shall be kept burning continually on the altar. It is not to go out. So this was a stipulation on it, but again, you can go through and find that David nor Solomon had any special provisions made in the law for the supply of the wood necessary to keep the fire ever burning upon the altar. Here we find that Nehemiah establishes a system by spreading this duty out among the people. That when spreading it out, everyone was to contribute in bringing the vast amount of wood. You can realize how much wood would be needed. And that's going to be a full-time chore, full-time job. Over time, a special day was regarded and appointed as a high festival and called the Feast of the Wood Offering or the Festival of Lophori. And that's spelled X-Y-L-O-P-H-O-R-Y. And this we find by Josephus, that he tells of this festival in the Book of the Wars of the Jews, Book 2, Chapter 17, Paragraph 6, where he writes, "Now the next day was the festival of Exlophore, upon which the custom was for everyone to bring wood for the altar, that there might never be a want of fuel for that fire, which was unquenchable and always burning." So again, Josephus lived during that time. He saw the wood and the amount that was consumed. So Nehemiah is taking that burden away from the Levites and spreading that out upon all the people to bring and contribute that part of it. In chapter 10, verses 35 through 39, we find next a provision being made for the giving of the first fruits and the tithes. In verses, the Levites as priests, again, as we said, had no inheritance among the land, and their portion was from the tithes of the people. When you go back to Numbers, the 18th chapter, and in verse 20, we find here, "Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in the land, nor own any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel." Verse 21, "And to the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance, in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting." And in verse 24, "For the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said concerning them, you shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel." When you look at also Deuteronomy, the 18th chapter, verses 1 through 5, "The Levitical priest, the whole tribe of Levi, shall have no portion or inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the Lord's offerings by fire and his portion. And they shall have no inheritance among their countrymen. The Lord is their inheritance, as he promised them. Now this shall be the priest's due from the people, from those who offer a sacrifice, either an ox, sheep, of which they shall give to the priest the shoulder and the two cheeks and the stomach. You shall give him the first fruits of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and the first shearing of your sheep. For the Lord your God has chosen him and his sons from all the tribes to stand and serve in the name of the Lord forever." So with them pertaining to the spiritual aspect of what they were to do in their service to God, God provided their physical aspects for them from the rest of the people who they served for. And again, they were getting not only the oil, the wine, the grain, the meat, so forth. There were certain parts of the sacrifices that you can see that was given to the priest that they could eat. All the first fruits were to be given to God, but then also to the Levites on that. So the Levites received the best from the children of Israel. Again, they received the oil, the wine, the wheat. We find in Numbers 18, verses 15 and 16, that the firstborn of animals and man was to be set aside also. However, man and the unclean animals, you'll find and can read that they were to be redeemed. They were to be redeemed, and that redemption was with money. And then that money was given to the Levites, and you could redeem those. Levites weren't supposed to have any unclean animals, so therefore it had to be redeemed if that's what you were giving them, and it was redeemed for money, and then they received the money. Just the same as the third shekel that Nehemiah set up for the service for the tabernacle. So in that, in looking at in these tithes, Israel had three different tithes of which were to be kept. The first was a continual tithe that was holy to God and not to be redeemed. It was to be used exclusively for His worship and His ministers. And you can find this in Leviticus chapter 27. In looking at it, Leviticus chapter 27, verse 30, starting, "Thus all the tithe of the land, of the seed of the land, or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy to the Lord. If therefore a man wishes to redeem part of his tithe, he shall add to it one-fifth of it. And every tenth part of herd or flock, whatever passes under the rod, the tenth one shall be holy to the Lord." You can also look at 2 Chronicles 31, verses 4 through 10 concerning this. So they had one tithe which was continual, and that was holy to God. The second one was a tithe that was offered yearly and was not used for God's worship, but for the worshiper and his desire. I know this sounds strange, but when you turn to Deuteronomy, the 14th chapter, this one could be exchanged for money. In the 14th chapter of Deuteronomy, verses 22 starting, "You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year. And you shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God at the place where He chooses to establish His name, the tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, and the firstborn of your herd and your flock, in order that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. And if the distance is so great that you are not able to bring the tithe, since the place where the Lord your God chooses to set His name is too far away for you when the Lord your God blesses you, then you shall exchange it for money, and bind the money in your hand, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you may spend the money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen, for sheep, for wine, or strong drink, or whatever your heart desires. And there you shall eat in the presence of the Lord your God, and rejoice, you and your household. Also you shall not neglect the Levite who is in your town, for he has no portion or inheritance among you." That was the second one that was to be done yearly. The third tithe was every third year and was for those without inheritance, the priest, and for the downtrodden and the destitute, which would have been the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow. When you look at Deuteronomy, the 14th chapter, starting at verse 28, "At the end of every third year you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in that year and shall deposit it in your town. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance among you, and the alien, the orphan, and the widow who are in your town shall come and eat and be satisfied in order that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do." And you can also look at Deuteronomy 26 chapter verses 12 and 13. So these were set in place. And again, Nehemiah sees that the tithings and the portions for the Levites were not being given according to the word of the law. And he contended with the rulers because Levites had to go and work in the fields for their substance. When you again look at chapter 13, and chapter 13 is just basically going back in a recap of what he had already done instead and instituted in these other chapters here. Chapter 13, verses 10 and 11. "I also discovered that the portions of the Levites had not been given them, so that the Levites and the singers who performed the service had gone away, each to his own field. So I reprimanded the officials and said, 'Why is the house of God forsaken?' Then I gathered them and restored them to their post." So Nehemiah sees these things that are going on, and he makes the corrections and the changes. And Nehemiah was adamant that Israel should no longer forsake or failed to provide for the house of God, being his servants and ministers. When you look back at chapter 10 and verse 39, "For the sons of Israel and the sons of Levi shall bring the contribution of the grain, the new wine and the oil, to the chambers. There are the utensils of the sanctuary, the priests who are ministering, the gatekeepers and the singers. Thus we will not neglect the house of our God. So Nehemiah recognized the importance of that. Again, you find in Nehemiah chapter 13 and verse 12 that Judah, or Israel, brought the tithe of the corn and the new wine and oil into the treasuries of the house of God. In chapter 13, again in verse 12. And all Judah then brought the tithe of the grain, wine, and oil into the storehouses. When the city was rebuilt, they had places that were called treasuries, so much so that they brought all the things that they stored there. If you go back in the days of Hezekiah and others, you'll find that the people did that, that during the time of the kings, they brought all of the tithings that they had, and it made great storehouses for them. And so here again, the city, the storehouses are made for the people to bring things, for the offerings to be brought so that all the Levites and the priests could have access to them. So that has been brought there. Nehemiah tried to set all in order as it should have been done and petitions God to remember his good deeds which he had done to restore back according to the law. When you look at chapter 13 and verse 14, Nehemiah says, "Remember me for this, O my God, and do not blot out my loyal deeds which I have performed for the house of God and its services." In verses 29 through 31, again, "Remember them, O my God, because they had defiled the priesthood and the covenant of the priesthood and Levites. Thus I purified them from everything foreign and appointed duties for the priests and Levites, each in his task. And I arranged for the supply of wood at appointed times and for the first fruits. Remember me, O my God, for good." And this was Nehemiah's plea, that God would remember him for the good, because he was trying to restore back, after the reading of the law and them hearing it, the things that needed to be restored back for the function of the city of Jerusalem. Now, that's chapter 10. Any thoughts or comments on that chapter? Chapter 11, we have already seen in verse 1 that Jerusalem was underpopulated and the city had unbuilt spaces within its walls. Here we find Nehemiah trying to remedy this situation by casting lots among the people. We find that the rulers of the people dwelling in Jerusalem and Lot's castle, that 1 out of 10 be selected from the villages to come and make their home in the city. Consider uprooting your family, leaving your inheritance, your labor, to move into the city and start afresh with rebuilding and finding means of income. This would be very daunting and challenging for those families, and this would be why they would be blessed by the people, because they willingly offered themselves. They were much honored for their patriotism and self-sacrifice for voluntarily coming to Jerusalem to settle. We see in verse 2, chapter 11, the people blessed all the men who had volunteered to live in Jerusalem. It was a voluntary action that they had to come and repopulate the city. In Nehemiah chapter 11, verses 3 through 24, we have what is an official public register of those living in Jerusalem, with the chief laymen mentioned in verses 3 through 9. That is followed by the priest in verses 10 through 14. Then you have the Levites in verses 15 through 18. Then you have the porters or the gatekeepers in verse 19, and you have the overseer and the singers in verse 42. And basically in that, it's just a recount or a register of all that they were doing in verse 22. Begins. Starting in chapter 11, verses 25 through 36, we have the registrar, those living in the villages throughout the land, with the residue of the priests and the Levites in verse 20. And the rest of Israel, the priests and the Levites, were in all their cities of Judah, each on his own inheritance. And so you have this listing on down through verse 36 of the names of those. And that covers basically chapter 11. Again, as we stated at the beginning of this study, this is written afterwards. So that's why you have this kind of bouncing back and forth, why you have chapter 13 recounting verses 10, and I mean chapter 10 and chapter 9. You have this in chapter 13 of what's taking place. We also looked at the problem with Sanballat and him with the high priest and the alliance there, and that's because of the marriage and so forth. So you had that, and chapter 13 is a recount, more or less, of what's already transpired. And again, this is wrote down afterwards. It's not wrote down real time. And that's why you have these registrars of the people that were there, just to make note of it as far as who they are and what they were. So that's basically what you have in chapter 11, is a lot of names and so forth of those that came back to settle in the city. So any questions upon that? Chapter 12, verses 1 through 26, you have the registrar of the priests and Levites continued, of those who had returned with Jeshua and Zerubbabel. And that again is going back to the time of Ezra and those that are returned there. In verses 27 through 43, you have a narrative of the dedication of the walls when they were finished, as recorded back in Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 15. When the walls were finished there in chapter 6, verse 15, you have here a narrative of the dedication of the walls. There was a lot that was involved with the dedication of the walls we'd already looked at. One of the things that the Levites had to do was sanctify themselves and make themselves ready to where they were able to sanctify and dedicate those things that belong to the service of the Lord. And not only that, but also the city itself. We'd already looked at that. What were the Levites to do? Did they not take the gates and sanctify them, set them apart for the use that they would be for? And so all of this had to be done within the city as it's being repopulated, being rebuilt back up again, and getting back to its function once more that they had read about, that he had read in their daily hearing of what things were to be done in the service to God. And so, last time you remember, it's been 70 years. 70 years since they left, were took out of that city, and it was burnt down. And now, they're coming back, and they're reestablishing the city plus the service again. It takes a while, but then when you consider that from Nehemiah's time to the time of Christ, it has really elevated again to the grandeur that it once had. Now, it may not be to the grandeur that it had with Solomon, but it's still, the temple is getting back into such grandeur again. So you have that. Nehemiah chapter 12, verses 44 through 47 is the appointment of those over certain duties and responsibilities for the priests and the Levites. And that basically is those that were porters, those that were singers, those that were gatekeepers, all of those that were doing their different functions. They each had their own responsibility to do, the Levites and the priests. They each had their own. There was ones that were set out, and you can go back through the Old Testament time and go back and see who had certain things that they had to do. There were those that were over the incense, those that were over all the various other apothecaries that they had to make the incense, and over everything. So each one is being kind of restored back under a limited group until it grows again to the size that it should be. So basically that's chapter 12 on that. Chapter 13 we've already looked at, been in and out of it through the whole time in studying this. And basically that's the book of Nehemiah. The thing to keep in mind with Nehemiah is he was just an average person. He was an average person like you and I. There was nothing special about him. There was nothing super about him as far as that he, you know, was like a Superman or something. He was just a normal person, like you and I, flesh and blood. He encountered the same problems that we encountered. He encountered the same obstacles that we encountered. But yet there are several things that stand out with Nehemiah. Is that he was of great faith. He was very strong in faith. No matter what it was, he believed that God would take care of him. He left the situation that he was in, which was not bad. God had took care of him in Persia. And he was blessed there, being next to the king. And now he comes to this, but he faced the challenge. He rose to the occasion. And the thing that really stands out is the way that you can see his great faith in God and how strong it was and how confident it was in his prayers. He continually stayed in prayer to God over everything and anything. even in the physical life, the things that they were doing. It wasn't just the spiritual things, it was the physical things that they had to do. He was in prayer to God over everything within his life. And not only that, but he placed that great trust and confidence in God that those prayers would be answered. And again, you see kind of the humbleness. He said, Lord, I've tried to do what you wanted me to do in the will, you know, according to your word. Remember me for good. And that was Nehemiah's final phrase. Remember me for the good that I tried to do. Okay. Any question or thoughts on Nehemiah? Okay, appreciate it then. I hope it's been enjoyable to you for the class. CL will start next Sunday on continuing with the alleged discrepancies and so forth in the Bible. Thank you.